TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and produced with WNYC New York Public Radio. This episode features technology commentator and author Kevin Kelly. TED Talks are made possible through the support of BMW, where ideas are everything. Here's Kevin Kelly.
I don't know about you, but I haven't quite figured out exactly what technology means in my life. I've spent the past year thinking about, should I be pro-technology? Should I embrace it full arms? Should I be wary? Like you, I'm very tempted by the latest thing. But on the other hand, a couple years ago, I gave up all of my possessions, sold all my technology except for a bicycle, and rode across 3,000 miles on the U.S. back roads, fueled mostly by Twinkies and junk food. And I've since then tried to keep technology at arm's length so it doesn't master my life. At the same time, I run a website on Cool Tools where I issue a daily obsession of the latest things in technology. So I'm still perplexed about what the true meaning of technology is as it relates to humanity, as it relates to nature, as it relates to the spiritual. I'm not even sure we know what technology is. I like one of the definitions that Alan Kay has for technology. He says, technology is anything that was invented after you were born. So it sums up a lot of what we're talking about. Danny Hillis actually has an update on that. He says, technology is anything that doesn't quite work yet. But I was interested in another definition of technology, something that went back to something more fundamental. As I struggled to understand that, I came up with a way of framing the question that seemed to work for me in my investigations. And I'm this morning going to talk about this for the first time. So this is a very rough attempt to think out loud. And the question that I came up with was, what does technology want? By what it wants, I mean, what are its inherent trends and biases? What are its tendencies over time? One way to think about this is thinking about biological organisms, which we've heard a lot about, and the trick that Richard Dawkins does, which is to say, to look at them as simply as genes, as vehicles for genes. So he's saying, what do genes want, the selfish gene? And I'm applying a similar trick to say, what if we looked at the universe and our culture through the eyes of technology? What does technology want? Obviously, this is an incomplete question, just as looking at an organism as only a gene is an incomplete way of looking at it, but it's still very, very productive. So I'm attempting to say, if we take technology's view of the world, what does it want? And I think once we ask that question, we have to go back, actually, to life, because obviously, if we keep extending the origins of technology far back, I think we come back to life at some point. So that's where I want to begin my little exploration is in life. We don't really know what life there is on Earth right now. We have really no idea. And one of the things we should do is just make a grid of the globe and randomly go and inspect all the places that the grid intersects just to see what's on life. And if we did that with our little Martian probe, which we have not done on Earth, we would begin to see some incredible species. These are things that are hidden away on our planet. Each one of these organisms, these magnificent things, what they're doing is they're hacking the rules of life. I can't think of a single general principle of biology that is not have an exception somewhere by some organism. This is a solar-powered sea slug. It's a nudibranch that has incorporated in chloroplast inside it to drive its energy. These are hacks. And if we looked at the general shape of the approaches to hacking life, there are current consensus six kingdoms, six different broad approaches, the plants, the animals, the fungi, the protists, the little things, the bacteria, and the archibacteria, the archies. Those are the general approaches to life. That's one way to look at life on Earth today. But a more interesting way, the current way to take the long view, is to look at it in an evolutionary perspective. What I like about this is it shows that every living organism on Earth today is equally evolved. fungi and bacteria are as highly evolved as humans. They've been around just as long and have gone through just the same kind of trial and error to get here. Each one of these is actually hacking and has a different way of finding out how to do life. Nowhere on Earth have we ever been where we don't find life. We find life at the bottom of every long-term, a long-distance drilling core of into the center of rock, and we bring it up, and there's bacteria in the pores of that rock. And wherever life is, it never retreats. It's ubiquitous, and it's becoming, wants to be more. More and more of the inert matter of the globe is being touched and animated by life. We see diversity. We also see specialization. We see the movement from a general purpose cell to the more specific and specialized. And we see a drift towards complexity. One of the things we see about life is that it moves from the inert to increasing sociability. And by that it means that there is more and more of life whose entire environment is other life. Like those chloroplast cells, they're completely surrounded by other life. They never touch the inert matter. There is more and more co-evolution. And so the general long-term trends of evolution are roughly these five: ubiquity, diversity, specialization, complexity, and socialization. Now, I took that and said, okay, what are the long-term trends in technology? Remarkably, I discovered that there's also a drift towards specialization. There's a general hammer, and hammers become more and more specific over time. There's obviously diversity, huge numbers of things. I actually had my daughter go around and count the number of species of technology in our household, and I came up with 6,000 different species of products. I did some research and found out that the King of England Henry VIII had only about 7,000 items in his household, and he was the King of England, and that was the entire wealth of England at the time. So we're seeing huge numbers of diversity in the kinds of things. This is a scene from Star Wars, machines making machines. How depraved. Well, this is actually what we're headed towards, where machines and the technology is only being surrounded by other technologies. Most machines will only ever be in contact with other technology and not non-technology or even life. And thirdly, the idea that machines are becoming biological and complex is, at this point, a cliche. That machines are becoming biological, that's pretty evident. So the major trends in technology evolution actually are the same as in biological evolution. The same drives that we see towards ubiquity, towards diversity, towards socialization, towards complexity. I suggest that, in fact, technology is the seventh kingdom of life, that its operations and how it works is so similar that we can think of it as the seventh kingdom. Then I began to think about what happens with old technology. And it turns out that, in fact, technologies don't die. So I suggested this to a historian of science, and he said, well, what about, what about steam cars? They're not around anymore. Well, actually, they are. In fact, they're so around that you can buy new parts for a Stanley steam automobile. So I began to think about, maybe that's just a random sample. Maybe I should do this sort of in a more concerted way. So I took the great big 1895 Montgomery Ward's catalog, and I randomly went through it, and I took a page, and I said, how many of these things are still being made? And the answer is all of them. You've got corn shellers. I don't know who needs a corn sheller. It'd be a corn shellers. You've got plows. You've got fan mills, all these things. You can go to the web and you can buy them now. And not antiques. All of them are still being produced. So in a certain sense, technologies don't die. In fact, you can buy for $50 a Stone Age knife made exactly the same way that they were made 10,000 years ago, a chert, bone handle. And in fact, what's important is that this information actually never died out. It's not just that it was resurrected. It's continued all along. In Papua New Guinea, they were making stone axes until 2 decades ago, just as a course of practical matters. Even when we try to get rid of a technology, it's actually very hard. So we've all heard about the Amish giving up cars. We've heard about the Japanese giving up guns. But I actually went back and took the examples in history where there have been prohibitions against technology, and then I tried to find out when they came back in, because they always came back in. And it turns out that the duration of when they were outlawed and prohibited is decreasing over time. And that basically you can delay technology, but you can't kill it. Okay? So this makes sense, because in a certain sense what culture is the accumulation of ideas. That's what it's for. It's so that ideas don't die out. We find that each of the major transitions in life, what they're really about is accelerating and changing the way in which evolution happens. They're actually changing the way in which ideas are generated. Technology is accelerating evolution. It's accelerating the way in which we search for ideas. So if you have life hacking, life means hacking the game of survival, then evolution is a way to extend the game by changing the rules of the game. And what technology is really about is better ways to evolve. That is what we call an infinite game. That's the definition of infinite game. An infinite game is played, a finite game is played to win, an infinite game is played to keep playing. And I believe that technology is actually a cosmic force. The origins of technology was actually at the beginning of the Big Bang. And at that moment, the entire huge billions of stars in the universe were compressed into a little quantum dot. And it was so tight in there, there was no room for any difference at all. That's the definition. There was no temperature, there was no difference whatsoever. And at the Big Bang, what it expanded was the potential for difference. So as it expands, and as things expand, what we have is we have the potential for differences, diversity, options, choices, opportunities, possibilities, and freedoms. Those are all basically the same thing. And those are the things that technology bring us. That's what technology is bringing us. Choices, possibilities, freedoms. That's what it's about. It's this expansion of room to make differences. And I think it's really important, because if you can imagine Mozart before the technology of the piano was invented, what a loss to society that would be. Imagine Van Gogh being born before the technologies of cheap oil paints. Imagine Hitchcock before the technologies of film. Somewhere today, there are millions of young children being born whose technology of self-expression has not yet been invented. We have a moral obligation to invent technology so that every person on the globe has the potential to realize their true difference. We want a trillion zillion species of one individuals. That's what technology really wants. I'm going to skip through some of the objections, because I don't have answers to why there seem to be bad technologies, other than to suggest that maybe the Seventh Kingdom, because it's so close to what life is about, maybe we can bring it back and have it help us monitor life. What we're trying to do with technology is find a good home for it. It's a terrible thing to spray DDT on cotton fields, but it's a really good thing to use to eliminate millions of cases of death due to malaria in a small village. Our humanity is actually defined by technology. All the things that we think that we really like about humanity is being driven by technology. You see, technology is a way to evolve the evolution. It's a way to explore possibilities and opportunities and create more. And it's actually a way of playing all the games. That's what technology wants. And so when I think about what technology wants, I think that it has to do with the fact that every person here has an assignment. And your assignment is to spend your life discovering what your assignment is. Okay? That recursive nature is the infinite game. And what technology is the medium in which we play that infinite game. And so I think we should embrace technology, because it is an essential part of our journey to finding out who we are.
That was Kevin Kelly, recorded at the TED Conference in Monterey, California, February 2005. TED Talks are produced by WNYC New York Public Radio for TED, and made possible in part through the support of BMW, where ideas are everything. For more information on TED, visit ted.com.